There are so many things to do in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, including on Saturday, August 19th, from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., it's time for the Deep in the Valley 2023 Festival. Raven Sings the Blues presents a second year of Psych Jam experimental country and folk bands performing, this year with Riley Walker, $75 Bill, Garcia Peoples, Sun Watchers, The Weeping Bong Band, Gold Dust, Ned Collette, and Gliders performing. That's at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook on Saturday, August 19th, the Deep in the Valley Festival. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Hey, this is Erin Moran from A Girl Called Eddie, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kirby Crone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, a wayfarm.org enterprise. Here, every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And why talk about race, you may ask? And my answer simply is, to combat racism. To do this, education is key and communications a must. It is my hope that you too will come to know there's one race, the human one, and many ethnicities. The bottom line is here. You'll find us keeping it real on Race Talks, where
no topic is taboo.
Woo-hoo-hoo! And that very interesting voice that came on is the voice of our guest talker for June, Oscar Carter, and I will share you more information about Oscar in our next segment. But first, I want to share with you what you would be listening here in on tonight's conversation and talk. Our segment highlights are our Q&A on Juneteenth. Of course, the month of June is a month to celebrate two special occasions. That's Juneteenth on June 19th and Father's Day. So we're going to have also a talk term, WOKE, W-O-K-E, and pretty much look at what does that mean in the general conversation regarding politics, because it's there. And a little bit of political conversation we'll have this afternoon with another guest. She's a special guest talker because she wants to join us and share her support and interest for a candidate for president for next year, 2024, and that's Marianne Williamson, which is also a conversation topic that we will be having with our main guest talker, Oscar Carter. Also, I have to say, we have so many people who shared with us that they enjoyed the quotes from last month. So I decided to add a few more WOWs, which is a wild term for words of wisdom. And so the words of wisdom this time is going to be centered around Juneteenth. And that way we can show our knowledge and support for the month, or I should say the day that makes my show, Race Talks, very much a necessity, being that Juneteenth is the day that slaves, enslaved Americans, were known to have been set free. So let me first share with you a Q&A. A Q&A. So my question is, Juneteenth, why is it a holiday in your state? So my assistant, Joey White, oh, I should say just Joey, sorry, and Margaret Ann, they are ready and poised to answer this question, because usually it's a very organic conversation, but I wanted them on to at least share with us their state and whether or not Juneteenth is a recognized holiday in their state. Who would like to be first?
Well, I'll go first. I'm Joey White. I live in Ohio, and I'm from Ohio, and it is a recognized holiday, Juneteenth, and only like public schools and like federal buildings are shut down, but like it's still jobs open, but not all jobs, if that makes sense.
That actually makes sense. Someone was asking me about their garbage pickup. I know that's an interesting thing to mention, but you know, in holidays, you don't get to have your garbage picked up on a holiday. So they were surprised that their garbage was picked up in New York State, because New York State does recognize Juneteenth as a holiday. And we were wondering about that, but someone says if it's a private entity, they have the option. So it's a very special categorized national holiday. What about you, Margaret Ann? What about your state?
So I live in Connecticut, and actually this is the first year that Juneteenth is being recognized as a state holiday. Our governor just passed or just announced this year that we would be observing it for the first time. So, yeah.
Wow. So it's spreading. Okay. Well, I'm going to just share a little bit. Well, thank you both for getting on air and saying that. I know this is not, you know, your forte, but you've done that wonderfully well, and I appreciate it. And I'd like to know from listeners if you would like to share what state you're listening from, because this is a show that is available on the internet by WGXC.org or www.wayfarm.org. So the historical legacy of Juneteenth, I'm reading from the National Museum of African American History and Culture. It's a Smithsonian Institute, and guess what? I've never been there. So I'm gonna ask you to Mr. Carter or Oscar, since we are familiar, have you gone there with your family? But let me read a little bit about what they see as why we would participate in recognizing June 19th as a very special occasion for all of America, not just a few states where it was actually recognized a longer time ago. It states, on Freedom's Eve, or the eve of January 1st, 1863, the first watch night services took place. On that night, enslaved and free African Americans gathered in churches and private homes all across the country, awaiting news that the Emancipation Proclamation had taken effect. And of course, the Emancipation Proclamation is what the president, then president, who was a Republican, and I'm going to mention that because we are talking a little political elements later, decided he was going to put forth to have all of those people enslaved in Northern territories, or a place where they didn't have slaves, would be freed in the South if they can get to freedom. At the stroke of midnight, prayers were answered as all enslaved people in Confederate states were declared legally free. Union soldiers, many of whom were Black, marched into plantations and across cities in the South, reading small copies of the Emancipation Proclamation, spreading the news of freedom in Confederate states. And they would be reading to them because, of course, slaves, enslaved populations were not allowed to read and weren't able to be taught. Only through the 13th Amendment did emancipation end slavery throughout the states. So that's how we got started. And during the period of Reconstruction from 1865 to 1877, many of the formerly enslaved people sought to reunify with families, and this allowed for a historical union being imagined. And that meant that 200 years plus of slavery were going to be tried to be eradicated during this time. However, we know that it didn't stay for long, although there were African-American or American members voted into Congress and allowed to hold many different positions. After that period of time, they were no longer available, and then a period came into America called Jim Crow. But Juneteenth still marks our country's second Independence Day. And it reads, although it has long celebrated in the African American community, this monumental event remains largely unknown to most Americans. And that's why I was asking today if your state recognizes Juneteenth, because it might be a little bit like Martin Luther King Jr.'s Day, where many different states ratify it prior to the national, to it being nationally recognized. So there you go. And if you visit the Smithsonian website, you can see that there's actually a digital toolkit, and that's great for all teachers and people who would like to know more about it. So I wanted to mention Juneteenth in that regards, because it's very important, and it's very important nationally, and it's very important here in this area where we were going to have, I said work, past tense, the largest, or I should say the longest Juneteenth Day event from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m., but we got rained out. And I want to make sure everyone who's in my listening area on the radio knows that I was just told by the co-sponsor of that organization that's setting up Juneteenth in Hudson that it will take place this month. So stay tuned in your local papers, wherever you get your information, because it is truly a remarkable event. It's not 8 hours of activities for friends, family, and just everyone who wants to get together and commune. So I would say keep that open. And it's a good thing that it's coming on after the show, although I really wanted to talk to people prior to the show and have them on to discuss it. So with that, I'm going to get to our first guest, our guest talker, Oscar Carter. I'm going to read a little bit about his bio that you are all available to read on your own if you visit the site wayfarm.org and look for Race Talks, and you will see a great picture there of Mr. Oscar Carter. Who
Oscar, please, Oscar. Come on, Kim.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that everyone would call you. Okay. Let's keep it real. I didn't say we'll keep it real on Race Talks. Okay. Oscar. Well, I'm going to keep it really real, Oscar, so you shouldn't have gone there.
Okay.
We put their father and Marianne Williamson supporter, and we have the theme as Race Towards a Healthy Heart. And then I'm putting him on blast now because he just put me on blast. He asked me and our team, the team, what's Race Towards a Healthy Heart? What's that going to be about? So we came up with this because of his extensive bio, which now I'm going to have you share instead, because I know I've talked too much, and I think it's time for you to share a little bit more about yourself. But I'll get us started. Oscar Carter is a Vietnam vet and a former public health service administrator with more than 30 years of experience as a senior executive at several of the largest healthcare systems. We're here to chat about his family, his mother and father, who are recognized veterans, and he's a father of daughters. And in this month, when we're recognizing fathers and Father's Day, I'd love for him to share more about that too. Of course, he is going to speak about the initiative that speaks to his passion and knowledge of the American political candidate, Marianne Williamson. So, Oscar, before I invite you on formally, I want to say to everyone that my father, Emery James, passed away this year in February, which is the month that I was born. In fact, he passed away a day before my birthday, and I was with him, and it was a most beautiful experience being able to be around him with his final breaths. So this month has been a little bit difficult for me. So being on this show with you, Oscar, someone I know and respect, who has daughters and who's here to share about the family unit, really makes me feel good about this time period, because it's very sad. I do want to say to my sisters and other siblings out there, this show is for us. Now, all that pressure, Oscar, I would like for you to introduce yourself to my audience as Oscar, and what your family means to you and this month, and of course, your support of Marianne Williamson, but we're going to be speaking about that after the next segment. So please, Oscar, share with our audience who you are and why you are happy to be here on Race Talks today.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation. I really didn't prepare a presentation, if you will. I have some notes and some bullet points, and I understood it's more of a, I guess, a back and forth conversation. And I think that works best in terms of really getting out there to people, you know, what we want them to hear, what we want them to understand. But to answer your question, born in Yonkers, New York, and I left Yonkers, New York, second grade, I think, third grade, and came to Hudson, where we're having this. And my mother and father came up there. There was a school for delinquent girls there, the training school, a New York State training school, and that's what brought them to Hudson. And so I did my whole primary and secondary education there, graduated from a school called Accomack Central School, which is really outside of Hudson. Left there, went to a school in Virginia. Sorry about that. Went to a school in Virginia. That's my oldest daughter texted me, "Dad, I'm on." she's in D.C. So I went and left, graduated from high school, 1968. I will tell you my age. I'm 76 years old, and I'm not saying that. And went to Virginia State University, which was Virginia State College back then. Turns out my mother and father also went there. They went to Virginia State College. And I think what's significant, I'll mention about that in terms of my family, my mother and father met in college, and Kim mentioned them being both veterans. Somewhere midway or quarterway through their education in college, they decided to enlist in the military. My mother enlisted in the WAC. This is during World War II. Enlisted in the WAC and military Women's Army Corps, and my father enlisted in the Army, and both of them served. Just recently, last month, Hudson, what is that? At the Alumni Association, what's the name of it? The local Veterans Association recognized them, and their pictures are up at the foot of Warren Street in Hudson. We're really proud of that. Since graduation, I am a Vietnam veteran. I served a year over there running a MASH unit in Vietnam, a medical unit. I came back to the States and got my master's degree in hospital administration and ran a few jobs throughout the country, ran a couple of hospitals, ran a hospital in Newport News, Virginia. And I'm going to say that was a black hospital. And I define as a black hospital that at one time there were 200 and some black hospitals across the country because of segregation. There are probably maybe two or three now. I haven't stayed kept track, but there's not that many left. Howard University, many consider that a black hospital. I don't particularly consider it a black hospital because it's partly government funded and run. But these other hospitals all had dominant black boards. The board of trustees or board of directors were African Americans or blacks. So I ran in one of those hospitals. Let's see. In terms of my career, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on that because I don't think it's all that relevant. I'll go back to my upgrading though in a minute around the race question, I guess. But I did, when I graduated from college, ran a couple hospitals and did a career of almost 35 years. My last job was, I was the regional director for the New York State Health Department here in New York City, and did that for about two or three years. Then I ran built a new nursing home for the state of New York in Montrose, New York. So that's kind of my background. I mean, there's a lot I could fill in there. I don't think it's all that relevant in terms of what we want to talk about, but we can come back to it, of course. Let me say this about race. So Kim knows this, and she knows part of it. So I have this whole out of the box, and I'm calling, I know it's out of the box because nobody's lining up behind me. But out of this out of the box thinking and thought, and this is, you know, my thinking, my personal thought. And there's others that others have this thinking, I know. And that is that I question for moving forward, you know, this idea of race. Now, we all know that it's socially constructed. I got it. It's socially constructed. And therefore, people kind of say, you know, they got the fact that it's that biological. But no, it's socially constructed. And therefore, it exists and we got to deal with it. Well, yes, we do. But not in that context, I don't think. We have to deal with, you mentioned, I think, one humanity or one person. I think we all deal with it in that way. And I think one of the biggest problems in the world is division, this divisiveness that we have in the world. And it's not just race, quote unquote race. It's not just race. It's not just color. It's not just religion. I mean, it's everything. You know, it's the Republicans and the Democrats and the libertarians and the whoever, the independents. And, you know, it's all this division. And what happens is a couple of things happen there. We get boxed into these divisions. I'm a Democrat, therefore I got to do X, Y, Z. I'm a Republican, therefore I got to do X, Y, Z. No, I'm a human being, and I will do X, Y, Z, what I feel is appropriate for me and my family and my neighbors and the world as I see fit. And I don't want anybody dictating me in it. So I don't align politically with anybody or any particular one thing. So I hope that's clear. We can come back if not. Let's see. What else, Kim?
Well, I have a question.
Yeah, please.
Because I always sit back and listen, and then I try to figure out what questions my listeners might want to know. But oftentimes, I just couch it like that. I'm sure it's just me.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
But here's a question, and it's a very small one. You mentioned the hospital that you helped build and everything, and you mentioned some of them were built for African Americans to use because of the fact that
segregation.
I understand, like, from my father being born in Florida, there were a lot of Native populations there. So when you think of, you know, African Americans or African hospital built for African Americans, were there any other ethnic differences there? Like, were there any Hispanic people or any Chinese people, anyone from any other place, or was it just for African Americans? I'm always wondering, where would the other groups go then?
Yeah, well, hold on. So there was segregation, and we were forced to create Black hospitals because of segregation. And when I say, so we were forced to do that, when I say we, the African American community, built these hospitals. And I guess you can say it was for them, but it wasn't. We had white and Black patients, so it wasn't just for them. But mostly, and the community that we served was in a predominantly Black community. But, you know, we had white patients that come to our hospital on occasion. So, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't segregated. You know, it's the same kind of thing with the historical Black colleges.
Right.
I mean, they came out of segregation also. But then they don't discriminate, you know, these black colleges are not just for Black folks or African-Americans, right. And there's a mix. There are actually, you mentioned in Florida, there was, it's growing now, that Florida A&M, I think Florida A&M had a Black hospital on campus. I think that was one of the ones down there a long time ago.
Okay. And one other thing about your background being in with hospitals, and I'm not sure if this is a question that you can professionally answer, but maybe on a personal note, because you do have daughters. I'm part of this African-American woman study of health, and it's now going into it's going to show my age now, 35th year that I've been a member of it. And a lot of research in Boston University is one of the sponsors of this. And it was always interesting because if there were Black hospitals for Black patients, why wasn't there more studies done for Black patients? There was this movie about one woman whose genes they used to help people. If we had, as a community, enough resources, financial resources to put into that, why not some other areas? And, you know, and especially being a Vietnam vet, or a veteran in general, we had a lot of stories about the Tuskegee experiments, right, where they would take servicemen and do different things to find out how things work in a person's body. So what are your thoughts or actual answers for something like that? Because you were part of the...
You're asking me why there wasn't more research.
And yes. Was there research hospitals, I guess? Was that not...
There are research hospitals. None of them were black per
That's
se.
What I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. I suspect, and I don't know the answer to this question, I suspect at Howard University Hospital, being a big university hospital and a big university there was some research there, but I don't know, you know, specifically what type of research they did. But I mean, overall, the reason why they didn't do it, because of segregation, because of racism and all of it, you know, it's just something they didn't study, you know, in terms of.
Well, I would imagine you said the board members had majority black boards. So.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Yeah.
But I would imagine the funding would still come from corporate America in that way? Or?
We had primarily at our hospital Medicaid and Medicare, which was governmental because most of our patients were low income. We had a few private patients that paid directly, but that was very few. But most were Medicare and Medicaid.
Okay, so I see that that would be a reason why it would have waited so long to...
Yeah.
See if there were any difference relative right. to people's ethnicity based on just biological inheritances with certain factors, you know,
yeah,
genes being necessary.
The other thing I want to add, you know, you said, I think you said professional. I am no longer a healthcare professional. And, you know, I look back on that career and I'm not real proud of it. And not just for black folks, period. So here's what I'm going to say about today's quote unquote healthcare system, which we really don't have. I don't think we've ever had it. I think I questioned this in this, you know, when I was running that hospital, certainly, even maybe a little before, there was a lot of emphasis on preventive medicine. But we haven't done much with preventive medicine. Preventive medicine being what doctors could do to help prevent illness, nutrition, environment, all those kind of things. Well, you know, nothing's been done much about that. And so that's one problem with the healthcare system is that we've really got a sickness system. People are coming to hospitals sick, but worse than that, probably, I haven't measured it out, but worse than that is we don't have a healthcare system because it's not run by physicians, it's not even run by hospitals, it's run by the insurance companies, period. And, you know, mentioned my daughter, my middle daughter called me up just out of blue a couple of days ago. Dad, what's with these doctors? What's with these doctors? Well, you know, I know. Their hands are tied because, you know, by these corporation insurance companies primarily and government in terms of what they can do and what they cannot do. So I am very disappointed in the system that we have. There's a lot of work to be done there. And it's not just with the hospitals. It's with, you know, all the environmental stuff. It's really about our health. And, you know, what they're doing is what the medical system is doing is treating symptoms. That's it. You know, now if I break my leg, I'm going to the hospital. But here's the thing. I haven't been to a hospital for an illness or a chronic illness for over 10 years. I've seen physicians, MDs, but my doctor is a chiropractor, kinesiologist, master herbalist, all in one. I'm 76 years old.
Master herbalist.
76 years old, no chronic illness. My wife goes there, goes to him. My daughter goes to him, and a couple of my other family members go to him. And I have no illnesses that I know of, and I'm doing just fine. I work out every day, and I got a
work out every day.
Horrible diet. I got a horrible diet, and I drink, and I do breathe in this smoke that came in a couple of weeks ago and the bad air. But that's what's happening. But I can't depend on the healthcare system. That what we know about the healthcare system as we define it usually.
Well, I do think at 70, you said 76 or 77, your age.
I got a couple more months for 77.
Okay. Well, then you have reached that age where I think people, you know, what is it when you retire and you get Social Security? You're over that age.
I don't know what you mean by that. I still work.
Oh, you might still work because you don't have to retire, but they base Social Security on your possible retirement. And
yes, I do.
I think women are supposed to be, 81? And the longevity of women's life is 81, and men, I think, are 77.
I don't look at those numbers. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I guess I meant that clearly you're doing something really well.
Well, I will say something about that, though. I really don't look at that number, and it's not important to me. And I don't know how real those numbers are for the individual. I mean, I got the averages, right? So I had a major surgery 13, 14 years ago. And I know, and I can't remember what the number he gave me, but I'm pretty sure I'm past that number. There's an MD that gave me this number. It was before I found my my chiropractic guy, magician, I call him. He gave me a number that I know I paid.
Of life?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you.
He was a top surgeon in one of the top hospitals in New York City. I won't mention the hospital.
And then left to do what he's doing now.
No, he's still there as far as I know.
Oh, okay.
I left.
Well, you mentioned your daughters. Yes. And can you share? I mean, I don't want you to share all their business, and they probably will hang up or stop listening if they're listening.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking you mentioned your daughters in your bio. The daughter that you just said that you talked to, what was that about? Because you didn't mention when she was upset and said doctors.
I don't remember specifically. I think she took one of her children. I have three grandchildren. I think one of the children she took to the urgent care center. And it was something the doctor was saying that, you know, some of these conversations, because I know how, you know, my daughters, if they're listening, they know I do this. And that is, I got the message, you know, that she called, she said, the doctor's already, yeah, I know, you know, so I didn't get all the details, but I know she went to an urgent care center and there was something what the doctor was not doing, or she wanted him to do. I think it might have to do with the amount of time, something like that, but I don't remember specifically.
Okay, so it wouldn't have been about her being African American and they not
treating her.
That has been a national conversation or concern where, you know, Black women would be looked at as you can take the pain. You can stand.
Yeah. Well, so you got to give me. So you're going to take me back now to say something about this race thing, back to me and how I deal with this. So, you know, this discrimination, you know, my whole career, my whole life, I never specifically, I'm only talking for me, specifically felt discriminated against because of my race.
You said when we first met, actually. That's why I want you on my show.
Yes. I said that to you, right? Yes. So there's a couple incidents that I might make a case that it was race, but I don't know it. And I'll mention what they were, or at least one of them. One was I was in high school at Akawamik. I'll never forget it. There was a attractive young lady, I think I was in high school, and she called me the N-word. Now that, you know, off on the surface was a racist comment. I'm not saying it wasn't, but I'm not sure that was her intent, because I was attracted to her and I don't know. I mean, I didn't do anything inappropriate, but I think she was being defensive, or I was coming on to her or whatever, you know, and that's my explanation for it. But it wasn't because she perceived me as being Black. I think she just saw me. I don't know how she saw me, but at least that's the way I took it. It was not something that was racist, the way I perceive it and the way I understand it.
Okay, because I think anyone, you know, I'm looking at Oprah, she would say on her show, you know, anyone who uses that term wasn't meaning anything nice.
I got it. And I didn't say she was meaning anything nice. I said, that's what she said. And I don't think her intention was to be racist. And I didn't take it that way. I just I was embarrassed. I felt bad about it. But let me give another example. Another example, two other examples, real quick. The other example is I was in Cleveland, and I was looking to buy. I used to own a bar, and there was a guy down the street who had a Hungarian bar, and I wanted to own two bars. So I went into his bar. The owner of the bar took me in there to show me the bar. So he took me in the back. I did the tour, and when I came out of the door, there were at least five or six policemen, full riot gears with shotguns, pointed at me. Okay, that was racist, right? Well, maybe not. In my mind, remember, this is Oscar Carter talking. So, and I didn't take it that way. I took it, these guys get to take my life. I didn't care what color I was or what their color was. It didn't matter. What happened was that when the owner took me in the back, he had patrons at the bar, and they thought I was robbing him. Now, you know, you could say that they thought I was robbing because I was Black, or you could say I was robbing. I always give this thing. What's his name? Eminem, that wears the hood, who's white.
Right.
I said, if it was Eminem running in, running out, I'm not sure those guys wouldn't have still called the guy. Again, Most people, my friends, will say that was a racist thing. Maybe it was. I don't know. Don't care. What was I going to do? Okay, you know, file a complaint. Let me tell you one other one. let me tell you one other one. So the other one, this one maybe comes the closest to it as being racial, and I can't say for sure, but there's something called data rank. When I went to Vietnam, I was supposed to run the company that I was assigned to because I had data rank over this other guy who happens to be white. And I had like 5 days data rank over him. Well, they gave him the command. I said, oh, no, you don't give him the command. I got data rank on paper, period. That's it. I went to the Surgeon General and got the thing changed to me. Okay, so, you know, I don't know. But that could have been racial. But, I just didn't waste a lot of time about that. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything other than I just, you know, I like what I really want in this comment, not this comment, in these types of comments that I have, that people respect. That was my experience. I'm not lying about it. And so people can interpret the way they want to interpret it.
Well, that's why I wanted you on the show, like I said, because you have an experience that is definitely different than my father's. Yeah. And my father has a very interesting experience. And one day I might just have a show where I just talk about my family and the information I have. But now that I have you on, I'm going to take a segment break here because we do have another guest to come on and to chat about Marianne Williamson. And this segment is Words of Wisdom. And what I've done with my team is take several quotes that was on display for a Juneteenth Freedom Day at the New York State Capitol, the Legislative Office Building. They had a great display there for most of the month, until June 19th. So I am going to just read one or two, because we don't have time for more since we have another guest coming on. And I want you to tell me if this means anything to you. I already know this one means something to you because you just made me think of it. This is why I'm going to share this one. The most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any. And you just showed that you knew you had power because you advocated for yourself on your behalf. So one of the things I like to do on Race Talks is to show that people have a sense of agency, and it doesn't matter what your ethnicity, what complexion you are, where you've come from, what your past and historical identity is. You have power unless you decide you don't have any. So you can speak up and speak to it. And that was by Alice Walker. So I'd like to know if you can, this is where I put you on the hot spot, can you guess which person said this? And I'll give you three possibilities and you choose one. Okay?
Yeah.
You ready? Okay, so this person, male or female, said this: I am America. I am the part you won't recognize, but get used to me. Black, confident, cocky. My name, not yours. My religion, not yours. My goals, my own. Get used to me. Who said that? Was it Frederick Douglass, Felicia Rashad, or Muhammad Ali?
You sent me the chat. I mean, I read it in the chat. I know who it is.
Oh, you read it in the chat. Okay.
Yeah, so Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali.
His picture's on my wall over there on the side, and it's nothing. What does it say? Impossible. Impossible is nothing. It's the quote I love.
Well, I think that's why the entire world loved him, right? Because he really did his own way all the time. And he wasn't someone that really was someone that people would love to, you know, be around, because he was cocky and not everyone likes cockiness. And yet we have a president or a past president who's in the news all the time currently, who is very much this example, right, of being maybe even past cocky, I would say. So I think this is a great opportunity now to open up the conversation to Marianne Williamson. I will let you start by sharing what your reasons for supporting her are and ways in which you have supported her. And this has something to do with our theme, because what I know of Marianne Williamson is for her to be of heart, right? And so we are racing towards, we race towards a healthy heart. So this is what we did in this show today. We talked about the hospital, you know, differences in abilities to be able to have healthcare, and how, in from your conversation, how you access health, and you can brought in your daughter, right, and saying that she just does not understand why she can't get what she wants with health. But we know that a heart healthy is, to be healthy like you are, you have to have be at ease with yourself, right? And racism actually can be considered an illness. So having thoughts and ideas such the way that this particular president, person who is running for president has, is really important for me to have a discussion about. So that's why I'm glad that you are on to have a conversation with Marianne Williamson. I will also share that I will bring on our special guest talker, who is Cheryl DaCosta. She texted me what she wanted me to say about her. She wanted me to say that she's an ardent Marianne Williamson supporter. So, and the other thing she wanted me to say is that she's a anti-racist person. So an anti meaning she's actively engaged in racial inclusion. So I don't know if you hear me, Sherry, are you on?
Hi there, Kim, I'm here.
Okay, we have a voice. So first let me ask you, Oscar, what you supported, we met, and when we met, it was her first time running, Marianne Williamson, and you were a actual supporter of her campaign, a member of her campaign. And this time I understand that you're doing something slightly different. Can you share what you are doing, and yes, also why you're enthused about Marianne Williamson for the second time?
Right. So I was a volunteer. I was an official volunteer on the campaign with Marianne Williamson the first time around. In fact, I became her national grassroots volunteer leader, and did that for a couple of years. Doing a lot of time that she was running. And the reason why I went with her and how she spoke with me, I think the main thing was when I kept two things. I kept hearing from her for the first from. First politician, and she's, I haven't heard any other politician talk this, and she's not a career politician, but the first time I've heard from a candidate was that, what are the underlying causes? Again, it's like that healthcare system thing. All these symptoms we have, and we're dealing with the symptoms. It's the same thing with our nation in terms of what's going on. You know, why does this country have very poor healthcare outcomes? Why are students here, people graduating from college and high school, that not achieving the same in other percentage-wise in a lot of other Western countries, or you know, so-called rich countries, if you will. And she was after the underlying causes. Now, I'm not here, you know, to really go on into what all those are. I don't have them there on her website, but she's doing the same thing this time. But the other thing that she's calling out this second time is the corruption. The corruption in the government. And that corruption is clear to me as day. I think it's clear to most people who would look. You know, the government has actually been bought out. The politicians have been bought out by, you know, it's just, you know, you kind of said it before. It's kind of like a saying. You hear that, but you don't really know that. I mean, if you look at it, it's true. I mean, going through this pandemic thing, this and the way some of the pharmaceutical companies were able to get the government support some of their drugs and what have you. I mean, that's dead every day. And that's from the money that these corporations and lobbyists are giving to the government. And I don't, you know, when I talk about the government, I'm really talking about the agency heads for the most part. And I'm one of the persons, and Robert F. Kennedy, who is also running against, or running with, not with her, but running also for the Democratic nominee, brought that out, this corruption at the agency head level is where all this money is going. As well as the politicians. So she's calling out the corruption. She's very outspoken about it. And it's real clear to me that that's what we need to be dealing with. That whole system needs to be turned around. One of the things that, one of the ways she sees of doing that is she's calling for public funding as opposed to corporate funding. In other words, individuals contribute to campaigns as opposed to corporations, which is what's happening now. The other thing I just say that you mentioned, she has actually proven herself. People, once people hear her and see her and understand what she's bringing, you know, I haven't seen many people actually listen to her and not support her. What people are getting is what the media is giving her, and the media is they're fearful of Barry Ann Williamson. They're fearful of Robert F. Kennedy because they're calling stuff out. And that's not.
They're fearful of MLK, anyone who leads with love.
Yeah, yeah, that's not what the establishment is looking for. So, so the media, by the way, the media is bought out also. I mean, totally. Yeah, you know? And I think Robert F. Kennedy was saying that this next election is going to be influenced mostly not by mainstream media, but by these podcasts and independent media and shows like this, where people are able to speak to themselves and have a conversation for understanding. And not be censored. That's the other thing. And so we have to watch that. So anyway, that's why I'm supporting her. She has proven that she has already proven of transforming people's lives. I mean, she's got seven best-selling books.
Best-selling.
Seven of them. She's written about 15 of them. She's been on
New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, bestseller. She was Oprah's spiritual advisor. Of course, it was on her show many times. And she does a lot of things in that area on various media outlets, YouTube. She has a couple websites and what have you. So she's already transforming millions of people. And as she will put it, you know, a nation is just people, a whole collective of people. So she's already proven exactly. Now we have to prove it in terms of a whole nation. And that's why I'm supporting her.
Well, I'm just hoping she's not before her time. It took a while for
she's
MLK
not before her time.
She's
right on time.
Yeah.
Well, that is, you're hearing the voice of my special guest talker, Sherry DeCrosta. Sherry, can you share where you're calling or you're calling in from or coming in from and share what your thoughts are?
In the Capital District of New York State. And my thoughts are simply that she is absolutely right on time. We need her. We needed her earlier, but we need her now more than ever. And as Oscar pointed out, she's a truth teller. And we need that truth. And she's a bringer of love. Back to your theme of the heart, Mary Ann is absolutely someone who believes in the power of radical love. You know, we've been fighting and we've been hating each other for a very long time, for eons. It doesn't work. We are at a tipping point. And we need Mary Ann. We need the power of love.
Well,
can I just add one other thing?
Please do.
So absolutely, you know, totally support and endorse exactly what Cheryl was saying. You asked me another question about why I'm not part of the campaign this time. So I'm not a part of the official campaign, although I am supporting Mary Ann Williamson. And my concern was, and still is, is I don't know how anybody's going to change this system from within. You know, I think where I've ended up with is that Marion's our best bet for doing the best she's going to be able to do than any other candidate from within. It has to be from without. And it actually gets to one of the quotes that you put in chat also that Barack Obama talked about, which I want to read.
Yes, you know, please.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person. Or if we wait for some other time, we are the ones we have been waiting for. We are the change that we seek, Barack Obama. And Marianne Williamson, and it also goes back to Kennedy, ask not for what your country could do for you, but what you could do for your country, yes.
Yes.
Marianne's thought on that is she has defined in both of her announcements a new paradigm of leadership. And that new paradigm of leadership is holding the space for the brilliance of others. That's us. That's that her. Don't look to her. Don't look to her, you know, and a lot of people do that. Looking to all these people that are going to save the day. It's not going to happen. It's going to happen. We got to get off our behinds and get to work and you know, and not just, you know, not just voting. You know, that's what we do. Okay, well, I voted. No, that's one thing, you know, but stuff done locally in your local community with your local politicians, the school boards. You know, I see a lot of activity across the country now in the school boards and those kind of places. That's what we got to get active.
Neighborhood associations, absolutely. Every place.
Get active. I know this is our chat talk, but I did promise the listeners that I would have a conversation regarding the term woke. And I think this is a really great time to be able to just mention. I believe what you're saying is that we need to be wide awake. So, and not be asleep at the wheel, so to speak. So the term woke was initially with that in mind, that opportunity for us to really open our eyes and see things and then engage, right? So the term, as it is used in many people's work who write books, there was this one young lady, she wrote a book called Woke Baby, talking with a little black baby on the front of the cover, and saying how she is going to be going through life with her eyes wide open and not taken aback by racism, which is how you just described your life, I believe, Oscar, right? You went through life woke, not with your eyes looking at what, you know, what my race, my identity is and how people are coming at me. So I'm just gonna give you a quick understanding of this term from the urbandictionary.com. Woke. When this term became popularized, initially the meaning of this term was when an individual became more aware of the social injustice, or basically any current affairs related like bias, discrimination, or double standards. Of course, as time passed on, people started using the term differently, recklessly, and being closed-minded, and talking about how it's not good now to be woke. So I don't know whether you should use the terminology or not, but you certainly should understand that being awake is much better than being closed-minded. Absolutely. Or anything else. I was kind of stopping you from speaking, Sherry, and you know, we're friends, we do that. I also want you to mention your ethnic identity to people, because people can't see through the TV, through the computer, through their lines. Not that it matters much what our complexion is on the outside, but if you would like to share that would be something, your ethnicity.
Oh, so you're speaking to me. So my skin color is white.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say about that.
You don't have to say anything else about that. I know your children are not exactly your complexion. But
that's true. My children are mixed race, yes.
Would your children be inclined to vote for Marianne Williamson this year? I mean, next year?
I do believe that they would.
What were some of your conversations about Marianne to them? Because they are younger. Well, actually there's two now. That one of your grandchildren can vote now, right?
That's right. She's 20.
She's 20.
Yeah.
So have you shared any of that conversation of your thoughts about Marianne Williamson with her, or she's just going to vote whomever she...
Well, she'll certainly vote her own mind. You know, we don't dictate votes, but I believe that she is appreciating Marianne's positions.
What about the fact that Marianne's a woman? Has that come into conversation at all?
And the fact that Marianne is a woman matters. The fact that Marianne is supportive of reparations for slavery is an issue.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think anyone has, like Oscar was saying, she's not being brought up on television unless it was, you know, to laugh at. I mean, I know you watch MSNBC, I do too, and nothing great has come out of the mouths of people on MSNBC, although I do watch the station sometimes.
Well, honestly, I don't watch very much TV anymore, and I see a lot more on social media, quite frankly. Actually, Marianne is taking TikTok by storm with the younger generation. So I think that's really good news.
Well, that's how Obama got elected. So we could cross our fingers here for those who are supportive of Marianne Williamson. I know we are running to that time when I need to let my guests know they should share right now any of their thoughts, their final thoughts with the listeners about what they want to leave the listeners with, and or how they see themselves going forward in the future with whatever that was brought up on the show.
I just would like to add a couple links in terms of what I was, but all of these are related to Mary Ann except for one. I was talking about the work I'm doing outside of the campaign, Mary Ann's campaign, and if people go to stepinamerica.com, that's one link, stepinamerica.com. The other link, and I put it in the chat, the other link, of course, please donate to Mary Ann. To do that, just go to maryann2024.com. And then there's a movie that came out called The Great Awakening, which I believe spells out what's going on in this world right now and what we can do about it. And it's really, it's not political. Well, everything's political, but let's call it not political. The Great Awakening. So anyway, people can get that stepinamerica.com. /blog, and you'll see one of the posts there, recent posts that, where I talk about the Great Awakening.
Thank you. Uh-oh, I see that Sherry has put up it's blurry. You might have to say it, because I can't see it. Oh, there it is, Disrupt the System.
Disrupt the System. It's a Marianne Williamson hoodie.
Okay, Disrupt the System. And I'm not telling you to tell us where you tell the audience to go get it, but where did you get yours?
Online, when I donated to Mary Ann Williamson.
Oh, okay. So you get gifts too. Oh, right. All right. And on her personal, on her website. Awesome.
Marianne2024.com. Get it there. Everything. Her platform, merchandise, and donate.
Thank you for that. Now, I'm just going to share a few words, which I normally don't do, but I'm thinking that it's best to have a close, and I don't want to forget it. So I am actually reading it tonight. It's very important that we listen to those who are around us and hear them, even if they don't agree with us. And in life, what you look at people and what you get from them is what you put in. That's not a quote there, but that's definitely a word of wisdom that my father shared with me. And I want to end this evening with my two very special guests. They're both very special and personal. Oscar Carter, Oscar, and Sherry DeCrosta, Sherry, and my two team members, Joey and Margaret Ann, holler at you. I want to thank my listeners, and I want to let you leave knowing that freedom exists. Freedom exists because you find yourself free. And we're going out with Maria, I think you're gonna have to tell me what her name is. Arivo, help. Oh, well, Miss Arivo, I would call it. And she's singing this song from her film that she did recently where she was an enslaved, or wasn't a slave performer. Cynthia Arriva, she's really great. So we're going to go out with that, a few minutes of her. And I want to thank you all, and listen to us next month on Race Talks. It's every third Tuesday at 7 p.m. I'm Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host, and may you find in yourself and in others love, beauty, joy.
Just in case I have to run. I do what I can when I can while I can for my people. While the clouds roll back and the stars fill the night, that's when I'm running.